While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and a warm welcome to everyone tuned in from every corner of our beautiful nation. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM, the home of meaningful conversation and bold national dialogue. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and this is On The Reading Is Analysis, the program where headlines meet depth and where context shapes understanding. Now, it's Friday, the 5th of December, 2025, and the time is 6 minutes past the hour, 1300 hours, and we've reached the end of yet another pivotal week in Namibia. Week marked by shifting leadership conversation, tightening economic pressures, and growing agency around accountability as the year draws to a close. Now, December always carries a certain weight, but this year the spotlight feels brighter. Citizens want answers, progress, and clarity as we move forward towards 2026. Now, across the country today, discussions are heating up on everything from the effectiveness of recent policy decisions to the performance of our institutions to the social and economic realities that continue to shape daily Namibian lives. Now, whether it's a service delivery, governance reforms, or the ever-evolving mining, energy, and industrial landscape, the stakes are rising, and so is public scrutiny. And that's why On The Radar exists. This isn't just another news hour. It's a national space for interrogation, reflection, and informed discourse. Here, we look beyond the soundbites and unpack what decisions really mean for ordinary Namibians. Now, whether you're navigating the lunchtime rush in Windhoek, tuning in from a farm in the depth of the rural, or streaming us from your workstation in the north, welcome to On The Radar News Analysis. From now until 14:30, expect sharp analysis, grounded insight, and voices that matter. We'll break down the key developments of the week, explore what they reveal about the country's direction, and hear from those at the center of shaping and challenging Namibia's path forward. Now remember, you can catch us live across all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app if you already haven't, and stay connected through our WhatsApp channel for instant updates and behind-the-scenes discussions that keep you part of Namibia's unfolding stories. Also, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Eagle FM Namibia, where we also put up audios that you can listen to that we have covered on the Reader News Analysis. So, certainly, Namibia, it's Friday. The week is winding down and the questions are piling up and the national conversation is just getting started. This right here is On the Reader News Analysis, where context meets the country's future. Let's get right into today's top stories. The Bank of Namibia has opted to maintain the repo rate at 6.50% following the Monetary Policy Committee's final bi-monthly meeting of the year held on the 1st and the 2nd of December 2025. In a statement issued after the meeting, the central bank said the decision was informed by the latest economic data and the committee's assessment of both domestic and global conditions. The Monetary Policy Committee noted that keeping the policy rate steady is crucial to safeguarding the one-to-one currency peg between the Namibia dollar and the South African rand, a cornerstone of Namibia's monetary framework. Now, at the same time, the bank said the stance aims to support the domestic economy, which continues to face a delicate balance of inflationary pressure, slow recovery in some sectors, and tightening global financial conditions. Now, by holding the repo rate at 6.50%, the Bank of Namibia maintains the cost of borrowing for consumers and businesses at current levels, ensuring stability and ensuring stability as the country heads into 2026. Now, this decision marks the first or and the final monetary policy announcement for the year 2025, reflecting a cautious but steady approach as the central bank monitors inflation trends, exchange rate movements, and overall economic activity in the months ahead. Speaking at the monetary policy announcement is the Bank of Namibia's governor, Johannes Gqaba-Gqaba. Let's take a listen to what the governor had to say in regards to the repo rate remaining unchanged.
On the 1st and 2nd of December, the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of Namibia held its bi-monthly meeting of 2025 to decide on the appropriate monetary policy stance for the next 2 months, guided by incoming data and the assessment thereof. To continue safeguarding the peg between the Namibia dollar and the South African rand while supporting the domestic economy, the MPC decided to keep the repo rate unchanged at 6.5%. Let's consider recent economic developments in our country. The domestic economy grew moderately. Inflation has remained well contained, while growth in the private sector slowed since the previous MPC meeting. The merchandise trade deficit narrowed while the stock of international reserves remains sufficient to maintain the currency peg and meet the country's international financial obligations. High-frequency indicators in the domestic economy suggest that while economic activity maintained positive growth, the pace of expansion slowed during the first 10 months of 2025 compared to the same period in 2024. The slowdown was primarily driven by contractions in the manufacturing sector, diamond mining, livestock farming, and transport subsectors. Given the generally subdued economic activity so far in 2025, real gross domestic product growth is now projected to slow from 3.7% in 2024 to 3% in 2025. That's 0.5 percentage point lower than the previous forecast. Looking ahead, real GDP growth, however, is projected to recover to 3.8% in 2026 and further to 4.3% in 2027. This recovery is expected to be primarily underpinned by a rebound in the agriculture sector, a sustained upturn in construction, robust electricity generation, and stronger output from the uranium subsector. Downside risks to the outlook remain and include the possibility of renewed drought conditions, infrastructure constraints, and sluggish global demand. Annual inflation remained contained and averaged 3.6% during the first 10 months of 2025, compared to 4.5% during the same period in 2024. The disinflation was primarily reflected in the categories of housing, transport, and alcoholic beverages. Nevertheless, compared to the previous month, inflation rose marginally to 3.6% in October 2025 from 3.5% in September 2025. The inflation projection for 2025 remains stable at 3.6%, while that for 26 has been revised downwards by 0.2 percentage point to 3.8% compared to the previous forecast. The 2026 revision reflects a strong exchange rate assumption and a favorable oil price outlook. Risk to the forecast remain exchange rate volatility and potential increases in administered and oil prices. The annual growth in private sector credit extension, PSCE, slowed to 4.7% in October 2025 from 5.8% recorded in August 2025. This slowdown reflects a reduction in credit extended to the corporate sector. Year to date, however, annual PSE growth stood higher on the back of increased borrowing from the corporate sector, with household credit remaining subdued. On the external sector, Namibia's merchandise trade deficit narrowed to 14.5% to 25.8 billion Namibian dollars during the first 10 months of 2025, compared to the corresponding period in 2024. The improved trade deficit was largely due to higher export earnings, particularly from uranium and gold, relative to import payments during the period under review. The stock of international reserves stood at 48.6 billion Namibian dollar at the end of October 2025, a decline from 54.7 billion Namibian dollars recorded at the end of September 2025. The reduction in foreign reserves was predominantly due to foreign debt repayments, including the Eurobond redemption and high import payments. This level of foreign reserves translates to an estimated import cover of 3.2 months, which still remains adequate to sustain the currency peg between the Namibia dollar and the South African rand and meet the country's international financial obligations. Let's consider global economic developments. Global economic growth has remained moderate since the previous MPC meeting. Inflation has eased globally across monitored economies, while key commodity prices displayed divergent trends. Key global stock markets continued to depict gains, while bond yields fell. The South African Reserve Bank reduced its policy rate, with other monetary policy authorities mostly maintained their policy rate steady. Global growth appears to have moderated since the last MPC meeting. Available third quarter GDP data suggests that economic activity slowed across monitored economies, with the notable exception of India, which maintained an upward growth trajectory. Looking ahead, the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, in its October 2025 World Economic Outlook, projects global growth to slow from 3.3% in 2024 to 3.2% and 3.1% in 2025 and 2026, respectively. Prices of most key commodities have diverged since the previous MPC meeting. The price of gold remained resilient during the period under review, primarily sustained by safe haven demand for both institutional and retail investors. Zinc and copper prices also trended upward, mainly supported by supply chain challenges and robust global demand. In contrast, although the uranium spot prices remain firm, it has receded somewhat, reflecting tapering supply concerns alongside an improved supply outlook. Similarly, crude oil prices moderated during the same period, attributable to increased supply. Meanwhile, diamond prices remained under pressure, partly ascribed to competition from lab-grown diamonds. Key global stock markets were relatively volatile over the past 2 months. However, they have rallied most recently, primarily driven by technology stocks and renewed optimism regarding a potential rate cut by the U.S. Federal Reserve in December 2025. Conversely, bond yields trended downward with a notable decline in South Africa, supported by an improved fiscal outlook, the reduction in the policy rate, and lower inflation expectations in that country. Global consumer price inflation has remained contained across the monitored economies relative to levels observed at the previous MPC sitting. Among the advanced economies, inflation was lower in the United Kingdom and the euro area, while it edged up slightly in the United States and Japan. Furthermore, inflation slowed in most of the monitored emerging market and developing economies, except in China and South Africa, where it increased marginally, although South Africa expects inflation to remain contained in the medium term. Looking ahead, the IMF projects global inflation to decline from 5.8% in 2024 to 4.2% in 2025 and 3.7% in 2026. Most of the monitored central banks continue to hold policy rates steady since the previous MPC meeting. The exceptions were the US Federal Reserve, the Bank of Russia, and the South African Reserve Bank, which reduced policy rates at the most recent meetings. So given all these developments, what's our monetary policy stance? The MPC decided to maintain the repo rate at 6.5%. Commercial banks are accordingly expected to keep the prime lending rates at 10.125%. This policy stance is deemed appropriate for safeguarding the one-to-one link between the Namibia dollar and the South African rand while remaining supportive of domestic economic activity. In determining the appropriate monetary policy stance, the committee noted the prolonged global policy uncertainty and potential risk to the domestic economy. Furthermore, the formal adoption of the 3% inflation target by South Africa necessitates additional vigilance by the Namibian authorities in managing domestic inflation to ensure the continued smooth functioning of the exchange rate peg. Despite a deceleration in the pace of domestic economic activity, the overall environment remains positive, with both current and projected inflation well contained and growth set to recover in the medium term. While capital flows were assessed to be orderly and the MPC was gratified by the smooth redemption of the Eurobond, narrowing the interest rate differential with South Africa was equally deemed essential. The normalization of the prime repo rate spread anticipated by year-end is expected to provide further support to the domestic economy, bringing the level of the prime rate to 10% at the end of December this year.
And with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back more to interrogate similar news related to this one right after the commercial break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipuranenge ni wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno mweku tete opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili neholamo iho etike kovano hile koshuala konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitiramo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doili nawa mune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka opone ushenjife nawa nokumona oijabweli nawa Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora tatuimwe bali heri nola natu heri bali no heri ile ko berewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Goeie nuus, Inbird nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinte nuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. As jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Inbird te geniet, kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Inbird bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Kimba, waar die wereld samenkomt, leid het af en teken vandaag aan.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On the Radar News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station. Now, in other news, as Namibia approaches the end of 2025, leaders in the country's economic sector continue to navigate a complex landscape marked by both significant progress and persistent structural pressures. Now, across finance, industries, trade, agriculture, and energy, officials and sector heads say the year has brought notable achievements, but also highlighted areas demanding urgent intervention. Now, on the achievements front, economic leaders point to gradual gross domestic product recovery, driven largely by renewed activity in mining, tourism, and manufacturing. The green hydrogen program, though still in its early phase, has attracted substantial international investment, positioning Namibia as a future player in renewable energy markets. Increased exploration activity in the offshore oil and gas sector has also strengthened investor confidence, with projections of long-term economic transformation if discoveries advance to production stage. Now, in the financial sector, stability remains a key highlight. The Bank of Namibia maintained a cautious monetary policy stance, anchoring inflation expectations and helping safeguard the Namibia dollar rand peg. Commercial banks have reported more robust lending activity, particularly among SMEs, following targeted support initiatives and financing facilities. And now to discuss on the importance of leadership and the challenges that come with it in light of the Bank of Namibia's Governor, Johannes Kavakeb, who will be leaving the bank as soonest. Let's talk to economist David Shambe. That is our in-house economist, David Shambe. Let me just call him up again and then we'll get right into it. Stay tuned.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno no utete opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili nehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Mune udo otukwetira o special ange dashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabweli nawa ninge Pada Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heari, Nola Natu, Heari Bali, No Heari, Ileko, Berewa, Mura Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the Eye.
Joining us telephonically now is my colleague David Shambe. A very good afternoon to you, David, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon, Juju. Good afternoon to our dear listeners. And how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Just recovering from a flu, by the way.
Okay.
Now, Shambe, of course, we're talking about economic activities and the challenges that, of course, our leaders, sometimes those that are heading institutions such as the Bank of Namibia and their achievements. But in light of this, let's talk about, in general, and also talk about the Bank of Namibia's governor, Johannes Kavakeb, who is set to leave the bank has left yesterday, so to say.
No, he's going to leave at the end of this month, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, looking at economic leaders and also leaders who are charged with the responsibility to make sure that they run the institutions, either it's institution of the state or private sector, it's quite very important to look at the character and also some of the achievements that leaders have made. But on top of that, you can also not only look at the achievements, you can also look at challenges that the person has dealt with in running the institution. For me, personally, looking at Namibian political economy and also looking at my engagement with some of the colleagues mm-hmm. and also some of the professionals within Bank of Namibia, I must say, Mr. Johannes or Dr. Johannes Gahanab, I think he was a leader that you can comment on, because there is never a time in Namibian political economy or in Namibian economy that BON faced challenges than how it has faced in the past 5 years.
Mm.
Because just look at the appointment came, I think around 2020 there, where you have to take Tateshimi to the government as the Minister of Finance, then you have to bring in Mr. Johannes Kahab from private sector. To me, I think he's one of the senior and accomplished corporate leaders.
Yeah.
But let us also look at the tangible part of the contribution. What I can say is that Bank of Namibia was, to me, and also to Namibia, I think was able to navigate through difficult challenges of the economy, such as COVID-19. Because remember, Juju, when you speak about COVID-19, you speak about total shutdown of businesses. Apart from, what is called, how do you call these frontline workers, such as paramedics and electricians? Only essential employees that were working. The Namibian economy shut down, and over 50% of the SMEs did not recover. But that also means pressure to central bank as a regulator, and also as a bank which has to deal with putting on economic policies and also management of commercial banks. I think going through COVID-19 and also maintain, and the Namibia economy did not collapse, we did not print the money. I think at that point, I think it must be, somebody must also appreciate that contribution also. Mm. And the other thing is also, Juju, that it's not only COVID-19. You also speak about drought, like, for example, 2024,
yes. Yeah.
Drought of last year, which impacted negatively our economy and even has an impact on this year. That's why this year growth, it was never seen. The prediction were never, did not materialize, particularly at the end of this year. But to me, what I think is a success is you also need to look, what is the person leaving behind?
Exactly.
What is the person leaving behind, and what is also a succession plan, and also not to leave a gap. When somebody is saying he's resigning, whatever reason, there must also be stability. But looking at Bank of Namibia, how it is, its transformation, and it having two deputy governors and its policies, I think to me that what he is leaving, and also the quality of people that are also there, all the best. You take all the people that you see doing very well and absorbed by that, by the bank, you realize to say it also plays a role in professional development, looking at that. And the other thing is also that, no one will speak about Namibian economy without speaking about, financial action task force or grey listing. Yeah, but looking at that aspect is to say Namibia, although we are still grey listed, they managed to deal with the deficiencies around the 12 of them, and we are only left with two.
Yeah.
I think that is also an achievement to look into, and also looking at financial sector transformation strategy and navigating through when you speak about financial inclusion, although it's still a concept which has to be materialized to see. I think it's at a good foundation, although there are also challenges that he has to leave other directors, I mean other governors to deal with, such as cybercrime and many other things. But at this point, I think looking at economic leadership, I think you can learn one or two things, and also you can also understand that Juju is very difficult. To be, and I'm always telling people, it's very difficult to be a head of Bank of Namibia.
Yeah.
It's easier for you to become a mayor. No, it's easier for you to become a minister. Do you understand?
It's
very difficult to become a head of BON. Number one, you need to be tough. You need to be academically good, and you also need to deal with challenges, because you are at the center of government, commercial bank, and the people of Namibia too. And that's why you need to have a corporate head, but also you need to understand how the politics is working also. Mm-hmm. I think to me, looking at that, that regard, I think, it requires the tough and that character. And then, maybe to also looking at what is the future has for us, looking at who is going to be appointed after that, mm-hmm. who is going to get that opportunity. We are yet to see who is going to lead, the very important institution in the economy. And also to see, and the other thing which I also wanted us to push, and which I think also other governors who are coming in need to look at, apart from cybercrime, which is still not addressed, is also the issue of connecting Namibia to Pan-African payment system, especially when you speak about Africa Continental Free Trade Area. I think Bank of Namibia still did not yet sign, or Namibia did not yet sign, that Pan-African payment system. And those are the only two things which I think others who are coming after him will have to deal with.
Mm. Now, yeah. What qualities, of course, we have seen how, I think, for me, when I've, anytime I'll read news about the bank, the governor, the Johannes Kavahab, whenever he's actually delivering a speech, whether it's monetary policy, whether it's all the many activities that the Bank of Namibia has been doing, and they are very active. Hey, have you noticed that the Bank of Namibia is very active? You know, I can always say that they really pull the public in. They really engage and inform the public through those sort of like not really conferences per se, through those meetings that they hold where media is also invited. I think they are really doing a lot in those terminologies or in that term. So now looking overall at the governor himself and how he always delivers a speech, I'd say he always makes sure that he informs. He makes it very clear and very concise to the point so that the media themselves can be able to get it and be able to disseminate the information to the rest. So what character traits would you be looking for in the next to be appointed governor of the Bank of Namibia?
I think we need a character that can also imitate from the outgoing governor. Number one, you need to be a forward thinker.
Yeah.
You need to be what you call, you need to be a corporate strategist. You need to look at 5 to 10 years for you to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you also need to dealing with finance, you need to be an effective communicator. You can't mm-hmm. take David and start running the BON. You need to be an effective communicator.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are communicating factors of the economy, you must also be able to have a character of calmness. That is also mm-hmm. what I have also observed, because usually there is always this thing in leadership which is being taught to say, a leader must always appear calm, mm-hmm. whether the kingdom is burning or wow. thriving.
Mm-hmm.
You appear because you are dealing with not only people's life, but the whole standard of the economy. The decision that you are making should be not only from you, but you also need to be somebody who is a consultative mm-hmm. leadership that can consult experts.
Mm-hmm.
Because for you to run that institution, you don't only need economists, you need finance, you need high level of financial investigators, and you also need a bit of academia and also politics too. But you need to be able to make a fast decision also, because you are dealing with time, you are dealing with money, and you are dealing with everybody. And maybe the other thing is also that because things are changing, we also need the character of with a bit of technical knowledge and also a bit of interest and understanding of how online banking is operating and the issues of cybercrime, which is a bit ongoing.
You're right. And lastly, before I do let you go, Shombe, the Bank of Namibia has, and of course, I know this is the central bank, right?
Yeah,
the Bank of Namibia has two deputy governors. Do you think that is something that is will still continue to be, even if that the governor is going to leave, or are they perhaps maybe going to do away? And why is it so important that the bank probably should have two deputy governors?
You know, I think it's a strategy which is done not to leave a vacuum, because a bank is a very big and important.
And we're dealing with a lot of money.
Billions of trillions. Yeah. That's why you can have two deputy governors, but they are given different responsibilities.
Yeah.
But it also has to do with when you are a deputy, and people must get it this very clearly. It's the same thing when you are a VP or a deputy president. You are a deputy. You understand? And it doesn't mean that you have high chance of taking over, and that is not automatically means that you can do that. But it's also for you to act in a situation that the governor is out. You start acting because you know everything. You are the second in command.
Actually,
but having two is also more easier to come and assist, because it's only Bank of Namibia, and when you also look at Namfisa, I think it has two deputy CEOs. But it's also looking at the volume of asset that you are dealing with, and also the burden that you are giving with, because everything has to go through the head. But having two, they can also assist in terms of advice, because if you look at the two deputy governors, they come from different backgrounds, but all within the financial institution. But I think it's also advice, and also not to leave a vacuum, because you cannot say, guys, we are still looking for somebody, where the decisions need to be made.
Correct.
Yeah.
Shombe, thank you so much for sharing your wonderful insights with us. And I always like it when we tap into your world of economy, you know? I think I get very excited when I'm dealing with an economist. So because, yeah.
Thank you, Juju. And yeah.
Okay.
All right.
And then we had it from economist David Shombe. We're shying away from the compliments that he ought to get. But nonetheless, we're still talking about the Bank of Namibia. Now, earlier this year, or actually about a month ago, specifically in September, the Bank of Namibia inaugurated Payments Through Leadership event that was held to talk about the success of the country's digital payments transformation rests on ensuring that no Namibia is left behind as the economy becomes increasingly digitalized. And the deputy, one of the deputy governors of the Bank of Namibia, Leonie Dani, spoke at that particular event as they called on public partner, private ship, which was mostly from the minister's side, the minister of ICT, and also for that the Bank of Namibia, for the Bank of Namibia, the payment Thought Leadership Series is designated to create or designed to create a platform for dialogue on the future of payments, exploring opportunities in fintech innovation, cross-border payments, cybersecurity, and financial regulation. It's, of course, noteworthy to say that this is something that was obviously inaugurated or brought up under the leadership of the current governor of the Bank of Namibia, that is Johannes Kavakab. So let's take a listen to that, and then we'll be back shortly.
Ladies and gentlemen, our national payment system, as we all know, it's not merely a machinery of transactions. It is the very backbone of economic growth, of financial stability and overall trust in our economy. Its modernization is not a single once-off event. It is an ongoing journey of reform, innovation and adaptation to the shifting realities of our time. Around the world, payment systems are ever evolving at an unprecedented pace. Simultaneously in Namibia, this reality also comes home, and we are advancing with the same speed, with the necessary clarity and vision as well as intent. However, the picture is not as rosy as what I just spoke about. Our financial inclusion surveys reflect a journey of good progress overall, but also serves as a stark reminder of unfinished work that we need to deal with. In 2007, less than half of Namibians, around 49%, had access to financial services. By 2011, that number had rose to 69%, and by 2017, it reached 78%. Now, many may say 78% is quite a good number. Why are you stressing? But if we pierce through the veil of progress, we will see that the national progress, in that national progress lies a sobering reality. The benefits of this progress remains unevenly distributed. While urban inclusion remains relatively high, rural areas and the informal economy less than a quarter of adults within the rural economy and the informal economy remain excluded from formal financial systems. These are not abstract numbers that the bank came up with. These numbers reflect untapped households, untapped farmers, traders and workers completely left at the margins of economic life. And to leave them behind and continuously excluding them would be the greatest cost of all. Our national payment systems must therefore act as a bridge which connects available as well as new and innovative financial services and products to those unserved and underserved segments of rural Namibia and the informal economy. This bridge must extend opportunity to every Namibian, no matter where they find themselves and regardless of what type of telecommunication device they hold in their hands. And it must ensure that no one is denied the opportunity to access available as well as new and inclusive financial products and services. That is our call to action. The Bank of Namibia's fast payment solution under its Instant Payments Project, driven by its Instant Payments Namibia subsidiary, remains steadfast in its resolve to serve as that bridge, bridging the divide between the current excluded and underserved, enabling them the opportunity to fully participate in the economy. Our Instant Payment Solution Bridge, allow me to call it that, it weaves together rural and urban communities into a whole new financial fabric. That is why, as we continue to modernize, our duty is not only to align with international standards, but to ensure that our home-based realities are effectively addressed and making sure that every Namibian enjoys access to the type of financial services I spoke about earlier. That access should be secure, it should be very, very affordable, it should be trusted, and it should open the door to state-of-the-art innovations that reflect the dynamism of our changing economy. We need to future-proof our national payment system and infrastructure and welcome all new payment providers. Leaving them on the margin is calling for arrogance and ignorance. In the age of mobile apps, platform-based companies can truly overlay existing commercial networks with payment services. We are seeing examples in other countries where this has fueled the meteoric rise of electronic and mobile money. Customer expectations are also changing. Whether hailing a taxi or having lunch, today's consumers want things instantaneously. Their expectations for an instantaneous needs met are the same as far as payments are concerned. The payments infrastructure must therefore keep up and keep pace with and meet consumer expectations, offering value-added services that enhance the overall consumer experience. The gratification must be immediately, otherwise the payment service and product miss the point. Payments are often silent, and I think most of the time we take them for granted. It moves beneath the surface of daily life. It remains invisible, yet it is indispensable to the economy. Every purchase, every salary transfer, every cross-border trade rests on a system that must be able to be trusted, which settles unequivocally, instantly, and in a resilient manner. At the Bank of Namibia, we know and we understand that national payment system is not just a technical rail. It is the digital bridge connecting buyer to seller, employer to employee, and citizen to the state, as well as Namibia to the world. And without that bridge, economies fragment, and with it, prosperity indeed flows. Ladies and gentlemen, if we reflect over the past two decades, Namibia's national payment system has undergone remarkable transformation. Once characterized by paper-based transactions and limited access, it has evolved into a more digital, interoperable, and competitive ecosystem that now underpins every facet of economic life. The phasing out of checks as a payment instrument, the ongoing modernization efforts in the existing payment streams, the issuance of our open banking and QR code standards, the migration to ISO 222, and the pending go-live of our instant payment solution, overall ensuring e-money interoperability, are all testimony of this progress we have made. Through deliberate regulatory reforms, such as the promulgation of the Payment Systems Management Act 2023, the revised determination on the issuance of electronic money, PSD3, and the determination on the operational and cybersecurity standards within the national payment systems, we truly work tirelessly to ensure an enabling regulatory ecosystem, embedding transparency, security, and consumer protection at the core of the system. These achievements were underpinned by the National Payment System Vision and Strategy 21-2025. This vision facilitated structural reforms, broadened participation, and led to enhancements in payment infrastructure, cybersecurity standards, and stakeholder coordination. Equally significant has been the shift in consumer payment behavior. Namibians are steadily adopting digital platforms, preferring convenience, speed, and security in their daily transactions. This was also further accelerated by the COVID-19 pandemic, proving that digitalization is not an add-on, but that it is foundational to a modern ecosystems around payments meeting the consumer needs effectively. We must also be very honest today about persistent challenges, lessons, and dependencies that exist and that needs our collaborative action. As we engage in this strategic thought leadership, we must reflect on what is happening globally. What can we learn from others, but equally understand our own challenges to enable us to position Namibia's national payment system as a world-class ecosystem that supports an increasingly digitized economy. The Cambridge SupTech Lab under the School of Alternative Finance 3 weeks ago did a brilliant presentation guiding us that we are facing a whole new financial system architecture where we will see AI-enabled actors, AI-enabled product services. What does that disruption mean for what we currently know as our payment system infrastructure? Do we understand it properly? Are we positioning and gearing ourselves effectively to deal with that, not even future change, already existing happening change? And are we optimally positioning our national payment system infrastructure to deal with this new financial system architecture? Those are the critical questions that we need to ask today to make sure our financial system is ready today to gear with it already happening future music. As Governor always guides us, listen to the future music and start preparing to dance to it already today. So part of the future proving of our payment systems is to focus on cross-border efficiency. We look at cross-border payments globally, and in sub-Saharan Africa, it remains the highest in the world. What can we come up as part of our new vision and strategy that unlocks potential to make it more affordable for us to transact cross-border? It will even become more important as e-commerce deepens international trade and investment linkages. So how do we address the current stale of cross-border payments in comparison to domestic payments, which is quite modern? And how do we build a bridge to overcome the challenge that I have just reflected? So those are some of the thoughts that we will have to unpack today. So achievements that we've made in our national payment systems thus far, whilst good, are not isolated events. They represent the foundation for the future, one that blends global standards with local realities, and one that is steadily widening access to opportunity. The new vision that we will craft today must truly stand as an inflection point. It should ask the question, not whether payments are changing or whether it will change. It will be, how do we ensure that this constant change in payments advance inclusion, advance trust, advance prosperity for Namibia? Are we aligned? Are we lagging behind? Where is it that we need to accelerate? How do we accelerate? And what are the levers that we need to pull to get that right? We are also called upon to create the necessary balance between opportunity and risk as we continue to future-proof our financial system. Today,
and then you had it from Leonie Dani. She is one of the governors of the Bank of Namibia. Now, at the same time, leaders do acknowledge that key challenges continue to restrain inclusive growth. High unemployment, particularly among the youth, remains the most urgent socio-economic concern, with job creation lagging behind economic expansion in capital-intensive industries. The manufacturing sector continues to struggle with high input costs, energy constraints, and limited export competitiveness. Small and medium-sized enterprises, the backbone of local entrepreneurship, face persistent barriers, including limited access to affordable credit, regulatory bottlenecks, and slow turnaround times in public procurement processes. In the agricultural sector, recurring droughts and climate-related shocks continue to destabilize food security and household livelihoods, particularly in rural regions. So economists caution that although foreign investment flows have increased, structural weaknesses, including slow service delivery, bureaucratic delays, and pressure on public finances, still undermine investor confidence. The public sector wage bill, rising debt levels, and constrained physical space also limit government's ability to expand social programs and infrastructure development. Now, despite those hurdles, economic leaders remain cautiously optimistic. They say the priority going into 2026 must be targeted reform, improving the ease of doing business, accelerating industrialization strategies, supporting local producers, and ensuring that major projects from green hydrogen to oil and gas translate into real jobs and local economic participation. For now, the sector continues to balance ambition with reality as Namibia works to stabilize its economic foundation while building towards long-term growth. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
Esira shisho, yotari kukwathere opovoro kara uwasira ya kweni ochisho. Watuchi ithana basic mental health first aid course. Haiga njua oshari chamhongi kwa mboka ili iyo, iyo NHP. Watapewa unongo unonseo na hene una okutongorora omadiliriko ugo petameko ugenasha. Nupiakavi nenge omathidakano gopama. Urabiro kuchane omokatiko kumekoe ninge aniranga pamwe nangoe osho otopewa unongo kene una okuya kwathera nukuya pa eabilido yiri mwanjira omanga upya kadiboka inauru darara kuyerere ounji na kene unokana uishangitha tarira po epanja yao yo nhp.com.na ipangono maradura sano odhina okurandura NHP rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Eagle FM.
Lipura nenge ni wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoewe ekukulile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuwana konongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kondado.
Now let's call up our lucky winner for the ShopRite USA 500 gift voucher. Now the question was, what is your favorite thing about shopping at USAFE? And this winner said, my favorite thing about shopping at USAFE ShopRite is because of its very low prices and combos always available with affordable veggies combos always in place, which I always buy. And they have picked up. Good afternoon and welcome to On The Radio, Miss Analysis. You are live.
Michelle speaking. How are you?
Michelle, hi. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. This is Happy calling you from Eagle FM.
Thank you for the phone call.
You are live on air. Anything you say can be used against you in the court of law.
It's Friday indeed.
Exactly. I am calling to notify you that you are our Friday's lucky winner of the 500 ShopRite USAFE gift voucher.
So nice. Thank you very much.
How do you feel in this December? You know, everybody needs the dollar.
No, definitely. Most definitely. And I actually need it.
I know, right? We all need it. I won't mind if you give me a dollar from it.
I will think about it.
Okay. Congratulations, Michelle.
Thank you very much.
Where are you? Which town are you?
I am in Windhoek.
You are in Windhoek?
Yes, right in the capital city.
Congratulations once again. You know what? Our team will definitely call you up to find out so that they can notify you how you can pick up your gift voucher.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Have a lovely weekend.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. Is it just me or do the winners always anticipate? I think it's as if they anticipate that, you know what? I might just be the lucky winner. I think I must also start anticipating myself. I must start anticipating. Anyway, as for you who continue to answer those questions, you just never know. You might be the lucky winner and keep on having faith. I've noticed that a lot of our winners actually, I think it's just a matter of time and probably they are faithful listeners of Eagle FM. So continue to listen and continue to send those text messages. You just never know when is your lucky day. Now, with that being said, let's take a trip to the marketplace shortly. We'll be back now with news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling.
And now for news beyond the borders of Namibia, we're starting off in South Africa where the University of Venda, also known as Univen, is set to unveil a multi-million rand infrastructure project. Let's take a listen to Professor Bernard.
At making the University of Venda is tomorrow set to unveil its multi-million rand infrastructure project intended at making the rural institution more appealing. This includes four projects to the total value of 600 million rand, consisting of a 200 million rand Faculty of Health Science building and a 70 million rand Advanced Nursing Science Simulation building. Univen also spent over 170 million rand on the construction of a bridge and access road along the Punda Maria Road, ensuring better accessibility into the institution. To speak more about the investments, we are joined by Univen Vice Chancellor and Principal Professor Bernard Mtambeleni. Prof, good evening. Thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. My first time visiting the University of Venda campus in Toyando was in 2012. And the last time I've been there was around 2015, potentially 16. And what I remember from that time was that there were constantly some sort of construction taking place on campus, whether it was the building of a new residence or a faculty being extended or refurbished. There was always some form of construction taking place. So University of Venda has always been a university under construction, but this seems to be its biggest undertaking yet, 600 million rand. Talk to us through some of those plans.
Thank you so much for having me tonight to talk about our infrastructure project. You're quite correct. The university has been a construction site for a number of years. And as we will be tomorrow celebrating the launch of these four major key infrastructure, and that is your main administration building, which cost about 168 million rand. We'll also be launching the Advanced Nursing Science Simulation Laboratory, which costs about 75 million rand. And then also the Health Sciences Faculty to the value of about 248 million rand. And lastly, our Punda Maria Road and the bridge, which is the most expensive and very difficult project to able to complete, to the value of about 180 million rand. So these are all four key major infrastructures that we believe will turn the tide in terms of our university, providing better access to our staff, to our students, to our visitors also who will come to the University of Venda. So we are quite excited to be celebrating the launch of this infrastructure tomorrow.
Yeah. Talk to us about what impact this will have on the programmatic offerings of the university to the specific needs of the community. I mean, a nursing college of that size is a serious undertaking, making it potentially one of the largest, I would think, in the country. And so that means there's a specific need that's being addressed there in the community that the university may have identified. But how does this affect the sort of new programs or expansions on programs, existing programs, that would be offered in the university?
Yes, we will be expanding our health sciences program, and we will be adding what we call human anatomy and physiology. We are also at advanced stage in terms of ensure that we have the pharmacology. So these are the new programs that we believe will make sure that, you know, they get much more bigger kind of attraction to our student. So apart from ensuring that we build the health sciences, we are also at a very advanced stage to introduce civil engineering. We are collaborating with the University of Cape Town in that regard, and we are very quite pleased about the work that has happened for us to really reach milestone. So we believe that this infrastructure, when it's completed, it will really become a very good space for our staff and our researchers, providing a safe environment for our students to learn and also to do research, to make sure that as a university, we begin to advance research like any other university in the continent. So we are quite excited to be in this stage where we can able to launch about, you know, a major infrastructure than what we are doing tomorrow. So this is quite a bit exciting for us.
Yeah. And of course, to become a research intensive university, it means you have to attract the right sort of research talent, research grants and research support, which are all important. And I think infrastructure plays a big role in that. For instance, an advanced science laboratory means that more scientific institutions can make grant funding available towards the University of Venda. Let's talk about the growing student population there, especially in the postgraduate fields that will take advantage of the research opportunities that come out of this. University of Venda is a growing institution, I would imagine, because it finds itself in the heart of a part of the country that is almost inaccessible to other parts of the country in terms of accessing higher education. Talk to us about the growing size of the student population and how this 600 million rand undertaking addresses that.
Yes, we had a student population of about 16,000, and that number is projected to grow in the outer 5 years of our enrollment planning. So we're envisaging quite a very high number, you know, towards 2030, as it were. But also, as the university was saying, we need to be forefront in terms of the research and our postgraduate, you know, offerings, and also the numbers. Also, they must increase. And I'm quite excited, you know, sitting the way I am here, to note that in terms of research, we are in a very good space to able to advance our research trajectory as a university. Yeah. Just, you know, few weeks ago, we were awarded a number of research chairs by the National Research Foundation. And this speaks well in terms of the mandate of our research. We have also, as a university, launched a number of centers of research and also a research institute that we also believe should drive this mandate of research for the benefit of our people here and also for our students. So we are quite excited, you know, to able to really broker this kind of work in this part of the county.
Prof, thank you so much for that. Really do appreciate it, and all the best. That is the principal and vice chancellor of the University of Venda, Prof. Bernard Mtambeleni.
Lipura nenge leo wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoe ekukulile oshafafana nongeshe faili nehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuan onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi.
And this Friday is a real giveaway. We're calling up yet another lucky winner for today for the ShopRite You Saved gift voucher. A very good afternoon to you.
Yes, afternoon, ma'am.
How are you, sir? This is Happy calling you from Eagle FM. You are live on air right now.
Okay, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Have you participated in any competition lately?
Yes, I did.
Mm. How many?
I think two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm. What and what?
The ShopRite You Save one, mm-hmm, and the Fanta Orange. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I am here to inform you that you are this week's lucky winner of the 500 ShopRite You Save gift voucher.
thank you. Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So who am I speaking to?
Erastus Angula.
Erastus, it's a beautiful message that you wrote. I'm going to read it up to the people. Do you want me to read it when you are off air or while you are listening as well?
I am listening.
Okay. So Erastus Hungara's message goes as follows. My favorite thing about shopping at You Save in Namibia is the affordable prices that help me stretch my budget without compromising on quality. I love shopping at You Save because their prices are really budget friendly and they always have the everyday essentials I need. It's convenient, fast, and perfect for saving a little extra cash month. Detailed and strong competition entry. What I love most about shopping at ShopRite You Save. Oh, pardon me. Okay. And that's that. It's very interesting.
Indeed.
You're such a writer, hey?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Keep it up. Anyway, our team will call you up to let you know how you're going to be able to pick up your gift voucher.
Okay, ma'am.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Mm-hmm. Okay. And there is another lucky winner for this Friday. Now, let's get back to our news beyond the borders of Namibia. Like I say, don't despair. You might just be next Friday's lucky winner. Now, back to our news. Zambia breaks ground on a $90 million US solar project in Chirundu. Let's take a listen.
Another milestone has been recorded in the Zambia's energy sector. Construction works on the 100 megawatt solar power project have started in Chirundu District, Southern Province. Energy Minister Makozo Chikote says the project is a major step towards strengthening the country's energy security.
This project is just not a mere project, but it's a project that is going to change our livelihood in our communities. The milestones we continue to record in the energy sector have been made possible through our bold and reformed-minded administration of the new Dawn government.
This initiative is being developed through a joint venture between ZESCO and the JIXCO Energy Corporation Limited.
Construction will take 10 months, and once operational, this plant will generate clean, stable electricity to power communities, create jobs, and enable investment. The location, just 11 kilometers from Kafue Gorge Lower, was carefully chosen.
From a benefit perspective, Jigsaw, with the aid of ZESCO, have engaged the community. We have a corporate social investment program on them that will, with the local representatives, work.
And Headman Katowola has appealed to the contractor to prioritize the employment of local people. Meanwhile, contractor Power China International has pledged to deliver quality works.
Power China International makes the following commitment. We will strictly follow the international and local standards to ensure safe construction and high delivery.
The over $90 million US dollar project is expected to create 600 jobs during the construction phase and 100 permanent jobs once operational. Lucky Piri, ZNBC News, Chirundu.
Rwanda and DRC sign a US brokered peace deal.
The presidents of Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda have signed a peace deal in Washington, witnessed by U.S. President Donald Trump. This follows an initial agreement reached between the parties in June. The signing in the U.S. capital, in the presence of a number of African and Arab leaders, marks a key moment in efforts to bring peace to the troubled eastern Congo, where fierce fighting continues to rage between Congolese armed forces and the Rwandan-backed M23 rebels, among other groups. Let's talk to Sherwin Price Peace on this now. Sherwin, good evening. Thank you so much for joining me. Really do appreciate it. The deal is signed, but do we know the details?
Well, we don't have a fact sheet from the lead mediator here, Oliver, the United States, but we have received a fact sheet from the DRC delegation, and I can share a few of the details that they have shared with us. They call it a peace agreement that is a historic step forward. This is not a temporary ceasefire, but a structured, legally binding peace agreement with specific commitments, implementation deadlines, and a permanent monitoring mechanism. There's a joint security coordination mechanism that will have permanent observers of this process, namely the United States and Qatar. Qatar, of course, has played a key mediation role in bringing us to this point. You'll recall, Oliver, that the foreign ministers of both the DRC and Rwanda signed a preliminary agreement in June in Washington, D.C. So we now see the full fruition of this process in the signing, by the DRC president and Rwanda's president. The DRC says the agreement meets the following red lines: enforceable withdrawal of Rwandan troops from the DRC and the restoration of its territorial integrity. A very important point. It says there will be no amnesty for war criminals and or their future integration into Congolese institutions. No trade of the DRC's natural resources, including in exchange for mediation. But as you well know, we now understand that there will be bilateral agreements signed by the United States with both Rwanda and the DRC in terms of the United States purchasing natural resources. President Trump talking about the rare earth minerals that have become so critical in terms of the AI future. And of course, the standoff that you well know in terms of China limiting access to those agreements and sort of moving the goalposts in a recent agreement with the United States. It also says, according to the DRC, that Rwanda must now implement these terms to establish trust and finally bring an end to this conflict. I will also preface by referring back to February of 2025, Oliver, when the UN Security Council passed a binding resolution demanding that Rwanda cease its backing of M23 rebels and withdraw its troops from DRC territory. That was in February 2025. That, of course, has not happened yet. So the question remains, what sort of leverage can the United States, be that economic or otherwise, to bring on the parties here to see that this agreement is enforceable and implemented? But legally binding agreements, ceasefires in the past, tend to die in eastern Congo's, given the proliferation of armed groups that we know are still prevalent in that region.
It's important that we test the consistency here. Let's go back to February when that UN resolution was passed. Shortly thereafter, Paul Kagame had once again denied any involvement with the M23 rebels. Furthermore, denied that he's funding them, backing them, or even arming them, and denied that any Rwandan forces are fighting alongside or with the M23 rebels. Does the signing of this agreement constitute a tacit concession that there is a link, at least on part of Paul Kagame this time around, between the M23 as well as the Rwandan forces?
Well, the United Nations, its panel of experts that monitors implementation of various agreements in the region, you know, as you well know, there is a MINUSCO peacekeeping mission that is longstanding in that region. South Africa has contributed troops to that process, including the SAMI, now defunct SAMI DRC process that is now withdrawn from that region. It has been long established that Rwandan forces are in the DRC, and that is no longer in dispute. Despite what the Rwandan president might or might not say. And so what happens now will be key. The United States has put its thumb on the scale here. Multiple peace agreements that the United States has been involved in since President Donald Trump assumed the White House again. And so it remains to be seen what sort of pressure, economic in the main, it appears, given the bilateral agreements that President Trump has talked about here, and whether that can foster a new prosperous future for the region that we know has a long-standing issue, a complex issue of armed groups that are proliferating. It's not just the M23 that's operating in eastern Congo. And so, you know, in terms of those non-state actors that are not party to this agreement, how will they adhere to a peace agreement that they have not been party to? Or how will they influence the trajectory that has been espoused here by the leaders in Washington, D.C.? I can tell you a number of African leaders have also been in the room there, and this just adds an additional level of weight here. President of Angola, João Lourenço, of course, in his capacity as the African Union chairperson. The president of Kenya, William Ruto, was there. The president of Burundi, Evariste Ndayishimiye. The president of Togo, Faure Gnassingbe, he is, of course, the African Union mediator. The foreign ministers of Qatar, as you well know, a key mediator in this process. The foreign minister of the United Arab Emirates, the chairman of the African Union Commission, Mahmoud Ali Youssef. And we also understand that Uhuru Kenyatta, the former Kenyan leader, was also in the room. You know, I also spoke to the United Nations spokesperson earlier today saying, you know, why was the United Nations not perhaps more greatly involved in this process? And the response was that they welcome this process. They welcome the United States' engagement, and that, you know, there are various configurations to various peace deals. And so while the UN might not have been involved in the processes that are underway in Washington, D.C., they believe the true test will be peace on the ground. That for them is the main focus here. And certainly, given the investment from various African nations over decades now, I think a great deal of impetus behind this deal.
If I didn't know any better, and if it weren't for at least the minerals trade part of this agreement, I would have sworn Trump really made a genuine attempt at that Nobel Peace Prize. But let's talk about that very briefly, Sherwin. What are the implications of the minerals trade part of that agreement? Does it mean, in practice, that Rwanda cannot sell or trade any minerals to any third party that were mined and extracted in the DRC?
I mean, it's difficult for me to sort of weigh in on that because we haven't actually seen the actual agreement in terms of, the mineral exploitation. We understand that there will be separate bilateral agreements signed with both Kigali and Kinshasa here. And so how those bilateral agreements inform the multilateral process that is now underway in terms of this peace negotiation or this peace process that, is unfolding remains to be seen. But, another point to make here, besides the mineral agreement is that there is a conflict that is ongoing in eastern Congo today. The DRC armed forces and the M23 very recently, as early as this week, are still involved in fighting along the border with Rwanda. And so how this agreement now informs processes on the ground, the chain of command, who is in charge, the proliferation of armed groups, these are open questions. But the United States affirming this process as a great day for Africa and a great day for the world. But proof will be in the pudding.
Sherwin, thank you so much for that. Really do appreciate it. That is Sherwin Bryce Peace coming to us from the U.S. following that Washington process peace agreement between Rwanda and the DRC.
Tanzania is set to acquire new aircraft as it eyes aviation growth.
The Tanzanian government has outlined new plans for its aviation sector. To become a major aviation player in the region, it plans to add 8 new aircraft to national carrier Air Tanzania's existing fleet of 16 and to develop new infrastructure.
Our direction is to open up the country, to make Julius Nyerere International Airport an international hub. We will also complete the ongoing construction of various airports, including Msalato International Airport in the capital Dodoma, and airports in Mwanza, Iringa, and Mpanda.
With an increased number of aircraft, Air Tanzania has been expanding its network, adding 5 new destinations in Africa this year alone, and planning to expand to Europe. Players in the industry say the establishment of an aviation hub is directly linked to growth in the country's tourism sector.
I would look at having more connectivity with different airlines, more contracts with different airlines to bring in more tourists in. And then, of course, open different venues like MICE, for example, which is Meetings Incentives. That's a new thing. Halal tourism. So different markets will open up for Tanzania with a growth of bigger airlines, with more airlines coming in.
However, one of the key challenges the government acknowledges has been plaguing the industry is the lack of trained personnel. It says it is addressing this by building a new aviation college and strengthening existing ones.
The government has enabled the National Institute of Transport to acquire 2 new planes for training purposes and the necessary accreditation to begin offering pilot courses, which started in June this year.
According to the International Air Transport Association, IATA, Tanzania's aviation sector employs about 16,500 people, generating roughly $131 million annually. The Tanzanian government sees aviation as a means to grow tourism and trade, helping to achieve its goal of creating 8 million jobs by 2030 and reaching an annual growth rate of 7%. The International Air Transport Association, IATA, expects East Africa to lead the growth of air travel across the continent over the next 20 years. The Tanzanian government hopes to take the lead through the acquisition of new aircraft, accelerating light aircraft assembly, and developing infrastructure and skills. Efforts that aim not only to make Tanzania a regional aviation hub, but also to increase the number of people who benefit from the sector. Isaac Lukado, CGTN, Dar es Salaam.
Tinubu approves delegation for U.S. security talks.
A working group is part of measures to deepen collaboration in tackling security challenges in Nigeria. The initiative is the product of an agreement reached during a recent trip to Washington, D.C. by a Nigerian delegation to reduce tension between both countries after U.S. President Donald Trump has threatened military action in Nigeria over what he alleged to be genocide against Christians.
We believe
National Security Advisor Nuhu Ribadu is leading the Nigerian delegation and will be joined by the country's ministers of defense, foreign affairs, interior, and humanitarian affairs. Also on the team are the heads of the Nigerian Military Intelligence Agency and the police, among others. Some analysts say the approach is the right way to go.
So there are a lot of things that Nigeria in particular can gain, especially when it comes to cross-border security, some humanitarian issues like the ones that we have in IDP camps, and then, of course, security generally dealing with the bandits or terrorists that we have in Nigeria.
It's a welcome development.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Luis Eshimi. From Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. I'll see you again next time.